by creating a break between the Chukosai and Shavuos. Why the buffer? Because the Chukosai is a bad stuff. It's the terrible repercussions of deviant behavior. And therefore what? And therefore the Torah says we want to walk into the holiday of Shavuos with that behind us and create a little bit of space. And therefore the Gemara says the same thing is true with regard to Rosh Hashanah. Because Rosh Hashanah, what we want to do is we also want to put a little bit of space. So there's another time in the Torah that we do this, the tochacha, the rebuke, and that is Parshat Ki Tavo. So what we do is we do Ki Tavo, and then we have another buffer space between that and Rosh Hashanah. So both Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah are marked by the concept of a new year, a new fresh beginning. In the language of the Gemara, Tichale Hashana Ukilo Lo Seha, let the year and its curses end, and Vitichle Shana Ubircho Seha, and let the year and its brachos begin.
We're halfway there.
Okay, thank you very much. That's very helpful. Tichle Hashana Ubircho Seha. Fine, it's all right. It's, I can do it without it, but
we're looking.
Okay, fine. So this is why we read Bahar B'chukosai this week, so that we can then read Bamidbar before Shavuos. That's why we hurry up to read the double parasha. In this section of Bahar, there is a prohibition that appears in two different places in the parasha. And Rashi, really based on Chazal, teaches us that the repetition is meant to distinguish in a fundamental way between the two prohibitions. So with that oblique introduction, please turn to chapter 25. Chapter 25, the Torah is talking about now the aftermath after Yovel, when everybody, the Jubilee year, the 50th year, and everybody returns home. Chapter 25, verse 14. Verse 14, page 698. The Torah says, V'chi simkeru mimkar la'amitecha. If you sell to amitecha something, to your fellow Jew, o kano miyad amitecha, or you buy from your fellow Jew, al tonu ish et achim. Do not, language of the arch scroll here is, do not aggrieve one another. So the prohibition is the prohibition of aggrievement. What does that really mean? The concept of al tonu ish et achiv. So here the rabbis tell us, Rashi just in a very curt way, Rashi tells us on this pasuk, zu ona'at mamon. This refers to the general idea of cheating with money. Cheating with money, the Gemara in a famous parak known as Ezehu Neshach, which talks about the prohibition of interest, says that there's the prohibition of charging interest, there's the prohibition of stealing, and then there's the prohibition of ona'a. What is ona'a? Basically, and I'm sure there are points of dispute on this, but basically ona'a is in the process of selling and buying, when you cheat the buyer, or you cheat the seller, depending upon who has the knowledge of the price. And what you end up doing is, you take advantage of the other person's ignorance and you get a better deal than you should have. Or either you overcharge in a massive way, or you undercharge, or you underpay. And in the language of Chazal, the key definition is, the word is shtus, shin, tough, vav, tough, which is 1/6, which we're not going to go into exactly how you define 1/6. Is it before or after the overcharge? But let's say something is worth $100, and you know that you can cheat the guy. You tell him, here, it's worth $200. And the definition of its worth, of course, needs to be defined, because maybe in Chol of Yisrael, maybe when it comes to certain products, that it's a little bit harder to get in Kalamazoo than it is in Brooklyn, right? So therefore, there are a lot of different factors that go into defining the value of something. Having said that, If something has a basic market value, however it's defined, you have only a little bit of wiggle room. You cannot charge more than 1/6 over the value. And if you do, according to Chazal, you have what's called bitul mekach. The deal is undone. The deal is undone, meaning that you have the right to claim the one who was cheated can say, I changed my mind. And if it's less than 1/6, it still very likely can be a prohibition, but nevertheless, it's considered to be mechila, it's considered to be foregone, forgiven. And if it's exactly 1/6, the deal remains, and you return the overcharge. Shtus kana umachzir ona'a. That's what the Gemara in famous chapter of Bab Metzia in Maseches Bab Metzia Perek HaZav talks about this Indian, this idea of ona'a. So this is talking about overcharging money. I remember many years ago, I went to Tveria as a bacher, single guy, and we went with a few of our friends. It was Bein Hazmanim, and we went around the tour and various other places, and we found a pizza place, and we were Americans, but we knew how to speak Hebrew, and we understood the prices, etc. But there was one guy who walked in and basically was wearing what they call a kova tembel, which basically is like, you know, an American hat, like one of those hats which don't really have a form exactly. I don't know how to describe a kova tembel, but the word tembel is not an honorific. And the guy basically, if he didn't write it, but it basically could have written, cheat me now. And he walks into the store, and the same pizza pie that cost us, or the same piece of pizza that cost us probably like, you know, 75 cents, those were the days, right? It cost that same guy about $3, right? Because the Israeli hiked him up. The Israeli figured out that this guy doesn't know either the value of the shekel, the value of the dollar, he's hungry, etc., etc. And he what? And he wronged him. That's a classic prohibition of ona'a. It's a classic prohibition of overcharge. Without getting into all the details, the Gemara derives a fundamental principle from the way the Torah describes in verse 14, memkar la'amitecha. Memkar means an item of sale. O kano miyad amitecha. Something that you buy from the hand of your fellow Jew. So the Gemara derives from this, ein ona'a bikarkaos, that there is no concept of overcharging when it comes to land. When it comes to land, real estate. If you don't believe that, just go down Pico Boulevard or Robert Boulevard. Anything goes, right? Real estate, the Gemara says, ein ona bikarkaos. The Ramban and others say, it's not the pshat. It doesn't mean that there isn't a prohibition of overcharge. There is a market value. The market value is defined in the way that, other ways that one defines market value, it's called comps. And if a person is led to believe erroneously that he's getting a good deal or the regular deal, and really he isn't, so then he is being taken advantage of, and this is a prohibition. It's just that the deal remains. In other words, the Ramban holds, when the Gemara says, ein ona bikarkos, that there is no concept of overcharge when it comes to land, what it means is there is an iser, there is a prohibition, it's just that it doesn't have the same implications with regard to something that's known in halachic parlance as metaltalin, which means movable items. So it's an interesting point to be made, the distinction between real estate and movable items. And then there are other things as well that are not subject to the prohibition of ona'a that the Gemara tells us. And certainly, for example, if a person has a sentimental value attached to an item, even if in the market the item only fetched value A, but for me it has something very, very significant, right? Let's say it is a card that my wife wrote to me when we got engaged. Let's say, trying to be sweet because I'm on video and you know whatever. So that card is of course absolutely priceless. There's some type of campaign. I think MasterCard that has such a thing. right? So therefore, if somebody says, I'll give you X amount of money for it, you'll say, I'll say, no, I'm sorry, it's worth a lot of money, worth more than I get. What do you mean? It's a piece of paper with some writing. You know, I say, yeah, but for me, it's worth a lot. He goes, okay, I'll give you more than that. And I'll give you much more than that. So maybe at some point, maybe I'll sell it, God forbid. Right? So the thing is that if everybody knows that it's worth more than, that they're giving more than what he's willing to give, more than its actual worth, and it's very clear that it's like because there are other factors involved, there also is no prohibition of oh no. Why not? Because everybody understands what's going on here. So there, this is the idea that we find with regard to being honest in the realm of monetary matters, and this fits into, shall we say, the classic triangle, of stealing, charging interest, and in this case, overcharging. And the Sefer HaChinuch, the classic expositor of the rationale of mitzvos, Sefer HaChinuch says the following very basic idea, something for us to think about that we've spoken about in previous years. He says, I'm going to read to you his formulation in mitzvah, Sefer HaChinuch, in mitzvah 337, he says the following idea. He says, what's the root of this mitzvah? What's the rationale of this mitzvah? He says, it's obvious that a person should not take money from another person in a manner of sheker, in a manner that is smacking with dishonesty. But rather, everybody should yizke be'amalo. Person should merit with his effort bima sheyichanenu ha'elokim ba'olamo, with what God graces him in his world, be'emet uveyosher, in truth and in a straight manner. And this is a very important social contract idea also, because kikemo shehu lo yona acherim, gam acherim lo yona oto. And Sefer HaChinuch says, because if you're going to cheat others, they're going to cheat you. And you might say, but I'm the best cheater ever, so therefore I can never be cheated. Yeah, maybe you are, but your son might not be as good as you, and somebody's going to cheat him. So therefore, a social contract is also the idea. He says two motifs. One is believe in God, right? As Rabbi Saul Salanter, I believe, once said, it's one thing to make God Melech HaOlam. It's one thing to make God King of the world, but it's another thing to make him Elokai, Elokai Elosai, my God, right? And this idea of recognizing in the micro that the Ribbono Shel'olam is found as well, that's clearly the idea of Ona'a with regard to money. And there's much to be said about it, but that's all we're going to say for now with this regard. Now, hold that thought for now. And let's go for a moment to verse 17, page 698, verse 17. The Torah says, "Lo tonu ish et amito v'yareta me elokecha ki ani Hashem elokechem," which sounds awfully familiar to what we read in verse 14. The Torah uses the same verb, the verb of tonu or ona'a, which has something to do, says the article, with aggrievement, has to do with taking advantage of. And the Torah says once again, "V'lo tonu ish et amito," and one should not what? One should not take advantage of his fellow Jew. But note, please, a few differences here. Number one, what is the term used for the fellow Jew? In the first verse, it is achiv. In the second verse, it is amito. So achiv implies, right, brotherhood. Amito implies a friendship. Number one. Number two, the Torah says, and you shall fear your God. V'yareisa me'elokecha. In other words, in this context, the Torah has to add another idea which does not appear in the first context. The Torah uses the word v'yareita me'elokecha, and now is not the time to go into the general idea of v'yareita me'elokecha, but I'll just tell you, we'll just look at one other place and you'll get the sense, you have to trust me. Whenever the Torah uses v'yareita me'elokecha, There's a particular code going on here. Anybody know what the what that term, "and you shall fear your God," connotes? It's a very specific connotation. And take a look, for example, if you want to see where else the Torah uses that term. In chapter 19, in the book of Vayikra, the Torah says, a few places here, but the Torah says, "Lifnei iver lo titein mechshol," page 660, chapter 19, verse 14. Lifnei iver lo titein mechshol, v'yareisa melkech ani Hashem. Before the blind, you shall not place a stumbling block, and you shall fear from your God, I am Hashem. And Rashi, over here, in this context, Rashi says, what's the idea of yareisa melkecha? You shall fear your God because you can get away with it. Because he's blind. And if he's blind, he doesn't know, right, what you did. And even if he's not blind and it's not really a stumbling block, but he's blinded by passion, and you give him a cup of wine and you don't know that he's trying to get over that problem, or you give him bad advice, and you could say, "Nah, I didn't mean it, I didn't know," etc. The language of Rashi, "Lefisha Adavar Azeh Eino Masu Labrios Leida Im Da'ato Shel Zeh Letova Ulera," because no human being can know exactly what his kavana was. And he could escape, and he could say, "Letova nitkavanti, I meant it for your good." Lefikach nemar bo v'yareisem elokecha hamakir machshevotecha. In other words, God knows. At the end of the day, the concept of yareisem elokecha is what lurks in the hearts and minds of man is only known to God. You can get away with it in this world, but v'yareisa melokecha. So the Torah uses that phrase by the stumbling block, giving bad advice. I didn't know it was bad advice. I thought it was a good idea to invest in Lucent technology. I thought it was a great idea. Enron was a very good stock. I didn't know that, right? Well, maybe you did know, right? V'yareisa melokecha. Only God and you know if you knew. Right? So how does that apply over here? Lo tonu ish et amito v'yareita melokecha, and you shall have fear of your God. So comes Rashi and he tells us a very important idea. The second concept of ona'ah. Again, the context of this of these prohibitions. The context of this prohibition starts out with the idea of Yovel, where the slaves go free and everybody returns to their land, and the Torah says, in commerce, in economy, be honest. And then after that, the Torah says, "Velo," and also, "Velo tonu ish et amito," and do not what? And do not aggrieve one man, his fellow friend. Be afraid of God. And Rashi says over here, a classic comment. Rashi says, "Kan he is here, al ona'at devarim." Here we have a new prohibition, and the name of that prohibition is ona'at devarim. And what does ona'at devarim mean? Anybody want to try? Feel free to respond. Ona'at devarim. What does the word devarim mean? Words that what?
Lead someone astray.
Words that
mislead.
Let's see what these words are. Words that cause ona'ah. Let's just hide behind that word. Rashi says, "Shelo yaknit ish et chaveiro," that you should not belittle. You should not cause pain to your friend. Number one. "Velo yasi enu etza she'ina hogenet lo." And you shouldn't give him bad advice, which sounds awfully similar to the concept of not placing the stumbling block in front of the blind, which we'll get to, the difference between the two. "Lefi darko v'hanato shel yo'etz," don't give him bad advice, which will be to the benefit of the one giving the advice. "V'im tomar," and if you'll ask me, "mi yodeya im niskavanti l'ra'ah," if you'll say, "But how do you know? I thought I was giving you good advice. I didn't mean to say something bad to you." "L'kach ne'emar v'yareisa melokecha hayodeya machshavos hu yodeya kol davar hamasol lelev," anything that's only in the portals of the heart, she'in makir ela misha machshava belibo nemar bo v'yareisem elokecha, the only one that really knows is God, v'yareisem elokecha. So here we have a new prohibition, the prohibition of not using words in a manner that causes great hurt. It's interesting. Interesting. But this is not so posh. If I were to ask you, where do you see in the Torah that you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara? So that we could probably find a few places. Like, don't speak bad, don't speak to somebody else, right, badly about that individual. Right? Don't say false, don't bring false reports. Yeah. Where does it say in the Torah, don't embarrass somebody? It doesn't say that in the Torah. Where does it say in the Torah, don't speak words that are hurtful to somebody? Not to somebody else. Where does it say that in the Torah? Here it says. Right? It's not a well-known phrase, not a well-known, but this is the source of using words that create tremendous hurt. But what's interesting is the way the Torah describes it here is the Torah uses the term ona'ah. The same language, I'm going to read to you the language of the Gemara in Baba Metzia and Daf Nun Ches. The Gemara says, and really what the Gemara is saying is essentially what we're picking up from the Torah itself. The Gemara is making an equation, the Mishnah makes an equation. Gemara in Baba Metzia on page 58 makes an equation between these two concepts. Kishem she'ona'a b'mekach u'memkar, kach ona'a b'dvarim. Just like there is a concept of aggrievement when it comes to business, back purchase back and forth, so too bidvarim, so too in words. So too in words. So where do we see that in the Torah? Because the Torah starts out, right, the Torah starts out with the commerce. That's the principal idea, right? And then the Torah brings it and broadens it to words. So it's this equation, and it's actually bound by a vav. If you take a quick look back in the Torah itself, on page 698, in verse 17, it says, "A right, do al tonu ishet achiv, etc., etc." And then the Torah says, "Vilo tonu ishet amito," and also, so it clearly, the Torah clearly is drawing a connection between the two prohibitions. Even though, if I were to ask you, is there a connection between cheating somebody by overcharging them or offering tormenting words, right? Words or misguiding somebody, we would intuitively not put the two together. One is an avera of dishonesty, and the other one is sort of like a bein adam lechavero avera that has to do with hurting somebody's feelings. I wouldn't have necessarily, you know, one is money. And one is, you know, you're causing pain. And in fact, the Gemara, in a classic line in the Gemara, I just want to read to you again. This is a classic set of Gemaras which we're going to refer to quite a bit here. The Gemara says that in comparing these ideas of ona'as devarim and ona'as mamon, so the Gemara says there are three reasons why ona'as devarim is considered to be worse than ona'as mamon, that the prohibition with regard to devarim, words, is worse than money. And I want to read to you the language of the Gemara, and then give you some of the details here. So first, prepare. Okay, so let me read to you first the language of the Gemara with regard to the prohibition of onas devarim. And I want to ask you the following question. I want you to think about this, and this will really be the yesod of the whole shir. The whole idea of the shir will be to try to understand what is the common denominator between onas mamon and onas devarim. What are the ties that bind these two concepts? The deep ties that bind them. Before I do that, I want to share with you just, first let me read to you this Gemara. The Gemara that gives you a few examples. In fact, the Gemara has, if I'm not mistaken, 6 examples of what is called Ona'as Devarim. Listen carefully to the 6 examples of the Gemara. Okay, here we go. Number 1, the Gemara says, you shouldn't say to somebody, Lo Yomar Lo, Bekama Chefet Zeh, Behu Eino Rotzeh Likach. You walk into a store and you say, I'm just wondering, you know, how much is this iPad Mini? And of course, you just want to buy it. You want to buy it, you know, on Amazon or some website in China, but you want to just get a basic sense of what the ballpark price is, right? Or maybe you bought it already. You want to make yourself feel better. Look, you know, look how much money you saved off the retail, and you had no intention to buy it. So that, the Gemara says, is that called Ona'as Mammon or Ona'as Devarim? What would you say? Is that words or money?
Words.
That's called Ona'as Devarim. Example number 1. Example number 2. Im haya bal tshuva. Person went off and then came back. Lo yomar lo. You shouldn't say to the bal tshuva, Zechor ma'asecha harishonim. You know, remember your. Remember when you. How's shrimp? How does shrimp taste? How does it really taste? Because, you know, I bought the Glot Mart imitation shrimp, but I'm really trying to find out, is it as good? Right? Zechor ma'asecha harishonim. Okay? Are the bakos really as good as the bakins? Imhu ben gerim. Okay. If the person came from converts, he wasn't himself a convert. Lo yomar lo zechor maaseh avosecha. Don't say to him, didn't your parents have a Christmas tree when they were... And the Gemara actually quotes, and this is very interesting, the Gemara quotes a pasuk shenemar beger lo tonev lo tilchatsenu, which actually, if you take a quick look for one moment in chapter 19 in the book of Vayikra, which is not where we are at now, you will see, we did not mention this before, that there actually is a special prohibition in the Torah to not take advantage. Verse 33, chapter 19, verse 33, V'chi yagur itcha ger ba'artzachem lo tonu oto. Do not hurt him with words. There's a special prohibition in the Torah not to hurt a convert. Rashi says, lo tomar lo emesh hayita oved avodah zara, yesterday you were an idolater, v'achshav ata ba lilmo Torah, we're going to get into that example, now you want to learn Torah. So it's interesting, we've now encountered a third time, and the Rambam says that a person could theoretically, if he taunts a ger, can be in violation of 3 prohibitions with one statement. It's a very, very serious thing, very, very serious prohibition. So we have 3 examples that are in the Mishnah. Number 1 is, don't walk into a store and say, you know, how much is this, when you have no intention to buy. If you walk into the store and say, I have no intention to buy, I'm just curious, that's permitted, because you're being very above board. If the person was a Baal Tshuva, don't say to him, how is the shrimp? And number 3 is, if he came from converts, don't say to him, do you remember what your parents used to do? Doing a sociological study, I'm trying to do a genealogical study, can you tell me? Fine. Now, the Gemara then picks up on this. The Gemara says, Im haya ger, if he himself was a convert, and he came to learn Torah, al yomar lo, don't say to him, Peh she'ochal nevelos utrefos shkatzim urimashim, the mouth that ate non-kosher, creepy crawlers, shkatzim urimashim, nevelos utrefos, prohibited food. That same mouth, you think you have a shot at learning Torah? Ba'alumo Torah? You came to learn Torah? Shenemra mipi ha'gevura? Don't say that to him. So that is a fourth example. A fifth example, which is massive, Rabosei. A massive example, meaning the word massive is not what it means when I was a kid. It's what my students taught me it means. It means it's very relevant and very poignant. That's, they wouldn't use that terminology, but that's what massive means nowadays. Imayu yisurin ba'in olav. If a person is suffering, and you see the person in pain, imayu chalayin ba'im olav, sick, o shaya mekaver es banav, or he buried his children, God forbid, al yomer lo, don't say to him, you know, you better check what's going on. You better check your mezuzahs. You better al yomer lo kederach she'amar lo chaver of le'iov. Hello, Yiroscha, Kisvachscha, Tikvascha, Vetum Drachecha, Zecharna, Mihu Naki Avad. You know that you think that you're a God fearing person, but really you're foolish. Right. And the one is somebody who's innocent, would he suffer? It must be you're not as innocent as you think.
Wow.
Now, okay, but I'm going to come back to it in a moment. Come back to all these in a moment. Ima yu chamorim mivakshim tvua mimenu. A fifth example. A sixth example. If people who are the donkey drivers and they went to you for produce, for food, for animal food. Lo yomolam, you know, I don't have any, but go there. I think they sell there. L'chuitzo ploni shuhu mocher tvua, because maybe he sells, you know, donkey food. Yodeyabo shelo machar leolam, and he knows this guy doesn't have it. You're just sending him on a wild goose chase, right? Etc. You can't do any of these things, and then the Gemara says the following line that I alluded to earlier. Amar Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Okay, we're in this period of time. Gadol ona'as devarim me ona'as mamon. Worse, greater is the iniquity of Ona'as Devarim than Ona'as Mamon. Shezeh ne'emar bo v'yareisa me'elokecha. Because in the latter it said, and you shall fear your God. V'zeh lo ne'emar bo v'yareisa me'elokecha. In other words, it seems like it's more subtle, more pernicious. We'll get to that in a moment. One of them affects the money, the other one affects the body. Or shall we say more where we understand it, affects what? The body, not in the physical sense, but rather what? The emotional health. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni Omar, Zeh nitan li hishavon, Vizeh lo nitan li hishavon. One can be undone, and the other one can't be. Three reasons why, even though the Torah presents it as if it was secondary, but three reasons why, in effect, really what? Really, it is primary. Worse. It's primary. Because, number one, it's something that the Torah says, and you shall fear God. Number two, it's something that affects the person's emotional health. And number three, it's something that cannot be undone. You can't, no backsies, as our children sometimes say. Right? No backsies, right? Often as a Rebbe, I will say words, and as I'm saying them, I wish I can take those words and shove them back into my mouth. I call this Rebbe foot and mouth disease, right? So sometimes a person, they speak 180 days a year, whatever, you're going to say words that you feel, that you realize as you're saying them are inappropriate, but it's hard to take them back. So comes the Gemara and gives us six examples. And I want to ask you, what is the common denominator of all six? If you were to say to me, oh, you're causing them hurt, I think that that's true to a certain extent, but I don't think that would apply, for example, in the case of the guy who's looking for food for his donkey.
Yeah, that's true too.
Right? I don't think it's the same. It seems like there's a very big difference between telling somebody, you know why you lost your child, God forbid? It's because you're a sinner. That's a little bit different than, you know, why don't you go there across the street? I think he sells donkey food. Yet the Gemara puts them all together in the same list. What is this common denominator of all six examples? Again, the six examples are going into a store. How much is this? But you know you don't intend to buy. Number two, the Baal Tshuva. You know, how is the shrimp? Number three, you came from converts. You know, remember what your parents used to do. Number four, the ger who wants to learn Torah. Your mouth that ate such disgusting things, you think you can attempt to achieve holiness? Number five, person goes through suffering. You chide him about that. Number six, right? The person is looking for to buy a product and you send them on a wild goose chase. There are many halachos that are associated with ona'as devarim as well. There are limitations. If a person is wicked, the Rama writes that it doesn't apply the concept of ona. Of course, this opens up a little bit of the floodgates because, you know, if you say, I can taunt him because he's wicked, right? And a lot of details in this halacha, but we're not going to get into that. But I want to point out a brilliant ha'ara that I read in a sefer online. I don't know who wrote it, but a beautiful point which I think is the only way to understand this Gemara. Give me a moment, Alan. And that is, you should understand, you should know, you should realize that the way I presented the Gemara, which certainly is the way that many people understand the Gemara, is probably not the simple pshat of the Gemara. Which means that the Gemara is telling us these many examples. But in the language, the Torah Tamima makes this point. He said, he quotes the sefer known as the Karban Aron. He says, all of these things that are being said from one to the other are being said in a manner that you're trying to guide somebody and trying to give them instruction. In other words, you're not simply cursing them out. You're not simply doing this in a manner that you are like, you know, you expect to learn Torah, that mouth that ate treif. No, you're saying to the guy, I understand your frustration. It's hard to make that transition. I mean, your mouth said a lot of disgusting words, and you ate treif, and now you're going to Kedusha. It's not so simple. So even when your kavana is, the guy lost a child, and you want to what? And you want to help him get past it, right? You want to help him get past it. So you say, you know, let's try to introspect, let's try to understand why this might have happened, etc. So even in the context where it's the Karban Aron says, where you're doing it derech tochacha, it's subtle, it's v'yareisa melokecha, it's subtle, it's not so obvious. If the way I presented it, you don't need v'yareisa melokecha, it's very clear, it's very obvious, because everybody knows that your kavan is dirt. No, you could have the best intentions. We will see in a moment an unbelievable Gemara in Bava Metzia, which is absolutely enigmatic, unless you explain what I just said. A famous classic Gemara, that will be the end of the shiur. But this Nekuda, this idea, Rabosai, that even when you are well-intentioned, you still can be in violation of Ona'as Devarim, is very, very important to understand. Now, before I try to bind together these two ideas, I want to share with you two stories. Two Chavetz Chaim stories, both are true. Now, sometimes you hear stories about the Chavetz Chaim, and, you know, it's a famous story, Chavetz Chaim once had to, this story is before the two stories. Somebody's the story goes that there was the Chavetz Chaim had to testify, some particular court case. So they brought a character witness to the judge, secular court, to explain who the Chavetz Chaim was. So I said that somebody once stole from the Chavetz Chaim. The Chavetz Chaim started running after him to say, "Amochel, amochel, amochel. I forgive you. Like, you know, don't worry, I forgive you." Like, so the judge, well, they couldn't believe it. He said to the guy, character witness, he said, "Do you believe that story?" So the character witness said, "Listen, whether or not it's true, I don't know. But one thing I can tell you, they don't tell those stories about you and me." That I can tell you, right? That I can tell you. So the Chav, people, this is an amazing story. I'm a little sad they don't have the Sefer in front of me because it's probably a little bit more specific, but I'll do the best I can. You can look it up. The Chavetz Chaim was well known by the age of 16 to be a brilliant Talmud Chacham. Today I was learning the Mishnah Berurah. The Chavetz Chaim, one of the classic works of the Mishnah Berurah, Halacha. The Chavetz Chaim, people think, you know, you look at that video of the Chavetz Chaim, people know something, but he's a humble man, short, etc. He was a titan in learning. He was a giant in learning. And the Chavetz Chaim sometimes will relate to Rav Yosef Karo, who's 400 years, you know, before him, and they'll say, the Beis Yosef says this, but he didn't, but you know, what he's saying is really against what the Ritva and the Rashba, the Ramban, like he's fearless. The same Chavetz Chaim who's like a little lemachal, like a little, like, you know, so sweet, but in the Beis Medrash, the Chavetz Chaim was a titan. He was a giant. So the Chavetz Chaim at 16, there was already people knew he was a great, great Torah scholar. And he could write his ticket as the one he wants to marry. Chavetz Chaim's father died when he was a very young man. His mother remarried. And the Chavetz Chaim's stepfather had a 26-year-old daughter. And his stepfather figured out who his stepson is. And he said to the Chavetz Chaim's mother, "I want him to marry my daughter. And if not, I'm going to divorce you."
Oh, wow. That's weird.
Sorry. I'm just telling you the story. I want, you understand, in the night we're talking now, Chavetz Chaim lived from 1838 to 1933 or something like that. So Chavetz Chaim was 16, so help me out here. We're talking about 1854, something like that. So Chavetz Chaim's mother was women didn't have, like, you know, "Oh, no big deal, let me just go to Social Security, I'll get, you know, I'll go to WIC, you know, I'll go to get the benefits." It didn't work that way exactly, right? Being a woman in the 1850s was a very precarious position if you weren't married. So Chavetz Chaim's mother came back at some point, and she, with tears, she "You know, you don't have to do it. It's a, you know, but this is what he said. You know, whatever." I said, "At least want to relate to you." So the Chavetz Chaim said, "It's all right. So I'll marry her. No big deal." The Chavetz Chaim's stepfather. The story's not over. The best part's still coming. The Chavetz Chaim's stepfather was a very poor man, but he, you know, a little bit he had, but he was a very poor man. So normally it's expected a 16-year-old Torah genius is going to marry somebody who's going to offer them support to continue learning. But that wasn't going to happen. So Chavetz Chaim says, "I'll marry, it's all right, it's no big deal." So the Chavetz Chaim went back to the yeshiva and he said, "I'm engaged." Because, you know, it wasn't like you're 16, you're engaged, you get married in 2 years. You don't get married at 16. So his chavrusa said, "Who are you engaged to?" So Chavetz Chaim, you know, said, stepfather said, "Does he have money? No, support? Going on?" So the Chavetz Chaim's chavrusa said, "You're going to give up your ability to learn for all these years? You know, you're going to do that?" Chavetz Chaim thought, "Okay, this isn't the Chavetz Chaim at 90, this is the Chavetz Chaim at 16, right?" He thought, "He's right." So he decided the next time he goes back, he's going to be mevatel the shidduch. He's going to call it off. Call off the shidduch. And he was going to ask for mechila. He's going to ask for forgiveness, because that is, as is the custom when you. But he understood that he's, you know. So he's on the way back. On the way back, he was some train station, and some fellow went into a seizure. and there was a crowd around, and he sees the fellow like writhing in the ground, and he's, you know, people in a seizure, whatever the seizure is, but they shaking furiously, etc. And then finally, like, it stopped. You know, and people didn't know what to do. Like, they weren't gawking, they were trying to help. Chavetz Chaim saw this. So the man was very, very embarrassed. Somebody, you know, his hat had fallen off, and his jacket was on the floor, and he's all dirty, disgusting, and everything. You know, and Chavetz Chaim saw this. So the man got up and shaped himself up, because they're helping him out, etc. He saw the man's face was completely red from embarrassment. And Chavetz Chaim thought to himself, why did I see this? He said, I bet you if I go back and I tell the girl who now is saying that she's engaged, and I tell her that the shidduch is broken, I'm going to cause her unbelievable embarrassment. So he decided then and there he's going to do the shidduch no matter what. And the Chavetz Chaim married a girl 10 years older than him who was dirt poor. And the Chavetz Chaim said, and she was the most unbelievably supportive wife I could have asked for. She ran the store, she let me learn, she told me what I needed to do to help get the support, whatever it was, you know, and it was the best move I could have made.
Wow.
The Chavetz Chaim, right, decided to marry his wife rather than violate Ona'as Devarim. Amazing. Ona'as Devarim means to cause a person pain with words. That's what we're talking about now. Ona'as Devarim. Now I'm going to share with you a second story in the Chavetz Chaim. All this is in that book that I was looking for. The Chavetz Chaim, he was well known, he was an author, and he would make parnasa by selling his svarim. He wrote svarim known as the Mishnah Berurah. He wrote svarim on watching one's language. This was a piece of his meager parnasa. So he had gone to various other communities to sell, and now he was going back home. He was going back, whatever the route was, and he had a big package, and he hired a Baal Agala wagon driver, and the wagon driver, you know, put the svarim, whatever, pays him, you know, whatever it was, and there was apparently the donkey or the horse was going very, very slow, so the Chavetz Chaim said to the Baal Agala, said, do you mind if I, he says to him, listen, let me just get off, and I'll, you know, he was cramped up and he was going for hours. Let me get off, and I'll walk alongside. He was going that slow. I'll walk alongside the, you know, walk alongside the. So he said to the Baal Gala, said, "Sure, no problem." And the Baal Gala, the wagon driver, did not know this was the Chavetz Chaim. Apparently, he didn't look at the Chavetz Chaim's Facebook page, which I'm sure there is a Facebook page with the Chavetz Chaim. Somebody put it up. I'm sure about it. I'm sure there's like a Chavetz Chaim Heritage Foundation. He didn't know what the Chavetz Chaim looked like. So he didn't know it was the Chavetz Chaim. So the Chavetz Chaim, you know, got, and he's like, he wants to, you know, stretch a little bit. He's going to walk a little bit. The Baal Agala said, here's this man. Let me have a good time. So he started making the horses go faster. And the Chavetz Chaim saw this. He tried to run after it, but he couldn't catch up. So instead, the Chavetz Chaim walked whatever amount of miles it was to the city. They knew where he was going. And the man, you know, the man had done something which was very inappropriate, obviously. So the Chavetz Chaim, you know, finally got to the city, tracked him down. It was not so hard. It was probably like, you know, a 3-block town. And he goes to the man, and he took his svarim. He didn't say anything, which is also a godless. But the Chavetz Chaim wanted to sell his svarim. But he realized that the moment that he would go around in the town, you know, what am I going to say, and sell his svarim, the man would realize
who he was.
So the Chafetz Chaim immediately hired another Baal Agala, another wagon driver. He knew not to go with that guy. He immediately hired another Baal Agala, another wagon driver, to go to a different town to spare the guy pain, even though that fellow is the one that really, one could have said, brought the pain upon himself. Now, there's a question whether or not that's normative, or was that l'fnim mishuras hadin? Was that beyond what it had to be done, or was that? But the idea of ona'as divarim, of not hurting somebody, is an unbelievably potent and powerful concept. Let me read to you what the Gemara says. Before I do that, you see, I'm running a little bit out of time. Before I do that, I want to read to you for a quick moment. I want to read to you something very, very powerful. Because let me read to you the language of the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch, we're going to try to present three ideas of what the essence of the concept of Ona'as Devarim is, what the essential idea is. And certainly they are all related, they're all connected in many ways, but each one focuses on a particular detail. So says the Sefer HaChinuch in Mitzvah 338, that's the mitzvah following what we read, the Sefer HaChinuch says, this mitzvah is defined as follows. Sefer HaChinuch, Kolomar, Shelo nomar liYisrael. Do not tell another Jew. Listen carefully. Devarim, words, and one could also, and this is a question in halacha, not just words, but even a facial sort of look. That look, right? Sometimes you walk down the street and somebody gives you that look. Or turns away from you. Devarim sheyach ivuhu, that will cause pain. V'yitza'aruhu, like pain and suffering. I'm sure most of us thought about this as sort of the idea. But now listen to the interesting and important addition. V'ein bo koach lehe'azer mehem. And you have no way of what? Of gaining anything from those words. In other words, if a person says to you something, and now we understand something very, very important. Am I allowed, if I have a good friend of mine, and the friend says, you know, I've gone through such suffering and pain, do you have any insight what it might be? I need your help. So are you allowed to say to him, you know, maybe check your mezuzahs? Are you allowed to say to him, maybe take on this mitzvah? Of course you are. Because that person is saying to you, I need your help. I want to grow. I want to be benefited from you. I'm bringing you into my world. But what's the Sefer HaChinuch say here? Sefer HaChinuch is saying, you go to the Baal Tshuva and you say, how do you feel eating non-kosher? Right? Or you say to them, you know, that must have been really hard. So that person is helpless. He's helpless. It was beyond his control. Ein bo koach. What you're doing is, you're taking advantage of a person in the place of their weakness. He doesn't know anything about the price point of this particular item. So you can charge him much more. You're ein bo koach. There's a particularly pernicious place for the one who takes advantage of another person's vulnerability. That is, in particular, the notion of Ona'a is, he's in charge of his past. He's in charge of whether his parents were Jewish or not Jewish. It's up to him. Right? What do you want from him? My donkey needs some food. I'm new in this town. Do you have any idea where I can get it? Oh yeah, maybe check down the road. He's helpless. Ein bo koach. You have no desire to help him. But maybe it seems like you have a desire to help him. Maybe it seems like you're giving him guidance. It's a judgment call. Who's the arbiter? Who's the arbiter? Nu, the Areisa Melokecha. Only you and God know. You can hide behind the cloak of righteousness. I just meant it for your best. There's no way of knowing. So says the Sefer HaChinuch, Shoresh mitzvah zu. The essence of this mitzvah is ki hu latet shalom bein abrios. It's that there should be a sense of harmony between people, the gadol hashalom. And v'ra'ui li'zar shafilu b'remez divarav. Not just words, but even the intonation, even just sort of like the illusion. You're looking really good today. Rabbi, that was a great today. Rabbi, today you said a good drasha. Today was a good drasha. Today was just the perfect amount of time today. Yeah. So then Sefer HaChinuch adds the following point. Listen, parents. V'noheges mitzvah zu b'chol mokom b'chol zman b'zechar m'vin akevos. Men and women, obviously. V'afilu b'ketanim. Even your young children. You know, the ones that your job is to give them education in Musar? The ones that you're supposed to tell them, did you brush your teeth? Did you make your bed? Did you go to the bathroom? And all these other annoying things that parents tell children. So even when you're doing it for their benefit, Ra'ui lihizaher shelo lehachivam yoter midai. You shouldn't say words except words that they will be able to accept. Zulasi b'mashetzrichem harbe kedei sheyichu musar. Don't cause your children pain. So says the Sefer HaChinuch. What's the inyan? What's the idea? What brings together Ona'as Devarim and Ona'as Mamon? It's taking advantage of a person's ignorance, taking advantage of the person's helplessness. That's one idea. A second idea, Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch. Again, each idea you can develop in a much more significant way, but I really want to get to a Gemara. Says Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch that what's the connection between the concept of Ona, Mamon, and Dvarim? So listen to what he says. B'shtehen ha'ane minnatzel et chushat chaveiro lira'ato. Which means, whereas the Sefer HaChinuch said, he's helpless, he can't do anything with what you provided him. That's one part of the coin. But the other part of the coin is, and I sort of said this in passing, sort of put it together, is that you are now leveraging yourself off of a person's weakness. One particular example that I saw in preparing for the shiur, two teachers, one of them has a difficult time controlling the class and the other one doesn't, and it's the same kids. Mm-hmm. Right? And so one teacher says to the other, you're having a difficult time in the classroom, which means that they are having a difficult time. And you say, no, what, is there a problem? You're having a problem? There's such malachim. The malachi asharis in my class. The angels, ministering angels. The other teacher might say the malachim also might be the malachi chavala, the angels of destruction. Right? So you know that that person, right, and it happens to be that the principal is in the teacher's lounge at the same time, right? So you're leveraging yourself off the person's weakness, right? Compared to a third idea that appears in Sefer known as the Ramaz. Read to you the language. Kol Haremez, the Rabbi Moshe Zechut. He was from the Italian Mikubalim of the 17th century. He says, the term Ona'a implies Gezela Be'ones. It implies some type of forcible stealing. Whether we're talking about Gezelas Mamon, whether we're talking about stealing money, or Genevas Kavod, stealing a person's honor, taking away their sense of self-respect. Onas Devarim is taking away the Kavod HaAdam. Now listen carefully, there's so much to say here. There's a very famous Gemara. Some of you are familiar with this Gemara. You've heard of pieces of it, but there is the end of the Gemara, which people are not familiar with. The Gemara tells us, Amar Rabbi Elazar Bab Metzia Nuntes. Elazar said, from the day that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, all the gates of prayer were closed, quoting a pasuk in Eicha, except, says the Gemara, except for the gates of tears, except for the gates of tears. And then Rav Chisda says, all the gates are closed except for the gates of Ona'a. Ona'a, says Rashi. What does it mean, the gates of Ona'a? It means the gates of the one who cries to God when they were the victim of taunting and tormenting words, the gates of the one who has been victimized, abused, those gates are never closed also. And it could be the Gemara is really saying one and the same thing, because that's where the tears come from. And says Rav, Le'olam Yehei Adam Zahir Ba'ona'at Ishto. One should always be careful. Listen, men, one should always be careful in terms of the way you speak to your spouse, but in particular your wife. Because why? Shemitoch shadim atam mitsuya. Because a woman is more easily able to cry. Therefore what? Ona'ata krova, then the violation of tormenting and causing her pain is much more easily violated. Yesterday somebody came over to me and he wished me a happy Mother's Day. So I said, I know that this is a little bit of a strange society in California, but I mean, so he said, this is only in California this conversation can happen. And this is a caller rabbi that came over to me. And he said to me, he said, we have to embrace our feminine self, our feminine quality. So it could be some men in this room cry easily also. It could be also. But the Gemara is speaking real men.
Real men.
Okay? So fine. So I hope I didn't make you cry. So the Gemara says that. The Gemara says, "Shemitoch shedim asa mitsuya." She cries, "Ona asa krova." So then that's a violation. And then the Gemara tells us a story that we all have heard of, but the context of the story is remarkable. The context of the story. The Gemara tells us there's a machlokias about a certain oven, whether it was Tahor or Tamei, right? Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim. And one said, if I'm right, let the carob tree, you know the story, right? Let the carob tree be uprooted. So the carob tree was uprooted. And the one said, no, if I'm right, right, let the walls of the base medrash fall in. If I'm right, let the stream change its course. The famous Gemara, each time when Rabbi Elazar said what he said, that's what happened. And the Chachamim still argued. And then he said, Rabbi Elazar, if I'm right, let a baskel come from Shemayim. And a baskel came from Shemayim and said, this is Rabbi Elazar, Haggadah, Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkinus, this is the Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, the great Rabbi Elazar. He said, if I'm right, let a baskel come from Shemayim. And of course what happened was a baskel came from Shemayim and said, Halacha the Rabbi Elazar, and the Chum said, it's very nice, but you know what? Lo ba Shemayim, it's not in heaven. That's the Gemara. So then the Gemara continues and says an amazing thing. So what happened was that Rabbi Elazar said this oven is, we don't need to go into details about what was with the oven, but he says this oven is pure. And Chum said it's not pure. So the Gemara says that that day, all the things that Rabbi Elazar said were pure because they were made in the oven. So the Chachamim came and they burned it all. They took everything that he said was pure and they burned it all because they said it's tamei. And they paskined in Sanhedrin that since Rabbi Elazar still held his position, he needed to be excommunicated, be put in cheirim. And then they said to Rabbi, they said, who's going to tell Rabbi Elazar that he's in cheirim? He's excommunicated. Rabbi Kiva said, I'll go. Because if I don't go, then it's going to be even worse. So the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Kiva went and he told him he's in cheirim. And indeed, Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus remained in cheirim until the end of his life. And there are halachas, you can't come within four amos. It's unbelievable halachas. So now listen to this amazing end of it. This is the part, everybody knows the, most of the story. Then the Gemara says the following thing. That Rabban Gamliel was the head of the Sanhedrin at the time. Okay? And Rabban Gamliel, so the wife of Rabbi Elazar, see if you can remember this, was the what?
Sister of
Rabban Gamliel. So again, Rabban Gamliel is the head of the Sanhedrin. He's the one that put him in excommunicated. Right? The wife of Rabbi Elazar was the sister of Rabban Gamliel. Talk about being stuck between a rock and a hard place, right? So, Rabban Gamliel was, says the Gemara, Rabban Gamliel was on a boat. And there was a storm that was threatening to drown him. And Rabban Gamliel said, I know that this is only because of Rabban Gamliel ben Hyrcanus who this whole maisa happened. And Rabban Gamliel got up and he said, Ribono Shalom, Master of the Universe, Galui v'yadu lefanecha, it's known before you, Shalom l'chvodi asisi, I didn't do it for my honor, I did it for the honor of Beis Abba, the honor of the Sanhedrin, the honor of Mishpachas Beis David, I didn't do it for my honor, l'chvodcha, there shouldn't be a machlokes. So the waters calmed. So then the Gemara says, from that point in on, the wife of Rabbi Elazar, the sister of Rabban Gamliel, Ima Shalom, Mother of Peace, her name was.
Wow.
Sounds like a hippie-ish name, I would have to, right?
Right?
Peace Mother, right? So she, at that moment, she never let her husband, Rabbi Elazar, ever say Tachanun. Tachanun is when you go like this and you let it all out. She never let her husband say Tachanun, because if he would say Tachanun, then she was afraid something terrible would happen. One day she got mixed up which day was Rosh Chodesh. She thought it was Rosh Chodesh and it wasn't. She saw that her husband went and he said Tachnun, and she went at that moment, says the Gemara, she saw him Tachnun and she said to him, you just killed my brother. And indeed that moment the word got out that Rabban Gamliel had just died. And the Gemara says, because all the gates of heaven are closed except for the gate of the one that has been victimized with Ona'a. So asks the Marashah and many other people, what's going on here? Rabban Gamliel just said to God before. What? He just said to God before, Lichvod, it wasn't my covenant, Lichvod Chasisi, and the storm stopped. Shalo Yirbu Machlokas be Israel. It was not about him. And yet, what happened? And yet, Rabbi Elazar goes for Tachnun, and Gamliel's gestorben. Gamliel's dead. So the Mefarshim say, an amazing thing. The Yerushalmi says the following. We'll end with this because we have to daven. The Yerushalmi says, what do you mean? Didn't Rabbi Elazar also understood? And the Yochid Barabbim, minority against majority, what do you do? You go with who? Go with the majority. What was he doing here? So the Yerushalmi says, go down. Sorry, that's fine. Well, it's fine. Yerushalmi says, Rabbi Elazar was upset because they didn't have to burn all the trumas in front of him. They burned all of, what did we say? They took all of the stuff that he felt was pure, and they took it out of the oven and they burned it. So says the Yerushalmi, they had every right to put Elazar in excommunication. But you know what the problem was? Sometimes when you're right, you still go too far. You see, the unbelievable idea of the Yerushalmi, but really probably the simple pshat in the Bavli is, it's not a matter of if you're right or not. If you can be right without causing somebody pain, and instead you overstated your rectitude, then you're still in violation of Onas Devarim. This is not meant to be a scary shir. It's meant for us to once again, especially as we walk to Kabbalah HaTorah, to be extremely refined and elegant and careful in our interactions with other people. That if we think for a moment, did I hurt this person? Did I cause this person a little bit more, too much pain or some pain? If I did, then I need to be able to immediately say, I'm sorry if I caused you pain. Onas Devarim, says the Gemara, the God feels the pain of the one who is victimized. The Ribono Shel Olam is the one who is there fighting the battle for the ger, and the one who is nis'ana. All the gates are closed except for the gates of the one who feels pain. And this idea of Onas Devarim and Onas Mamon, it's not about stealing the money, and it's not about necessarily the words. It's about what you did to hurt another person. I both say there's much more to say, but this inyan of using your words correctly, the name of the shir is called The World of Words. Perhaps it goes back to the very beginning of creation, because Unklis taught us that that which creates divinity, that which is the nefesh chaya, that which is the spark of Hashem in all of us, is the ruach memalala, is the speaking spirit. Cognitive man using his words to create the ruchnius, to create divinity, Hashem in the world, that's the inyan of using your words correctly. And to the extent that a person uses the words in a way that causes pain and suffering, they are denying the very spark of divinity that lays within. And in that respect, it is God who's reclaiming his covet, who's reclaiming his honor, by making sure that the one who feels pain should not feel that way forever. And Hashem should give us the ability to be refined, to cause, to abate pain, not cause pain. Be'ezus Hashem, we should walk into Shavuos in a beautiful way. Rabbi Osai, once again, we would love to see you at the banquet. There are flyers in the